Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is Felicity Green, the first woman on the board of a national newspaper. She has blazed a trail and cut a dash for over 50 years. Her early byline was Felicity Green on the fashion scene, and as hemlines headed north in the early 60s, she hit her stride on Fleet Street, making her reputation at the Mirror with, among other things, a reader's offer for a pink gingham mini dress and matching headscarf. They shifted more than 17,000, proving to her sceptical bosses that she at once had her finger on the pulse and her other hand on the purse strings. She says, until the 1960s, young women copied their mothers. There was nothing else available. Now, nobody wants to look like an old lady, including old ladies. Do you aim, I wonder, Felicity Green, to be fashionable or to be stylish?
I've never been fashionable. I think fashion needs to be followed at a very, very respectful distance. One of my heroines, fashion heroines, was Jean Muir. And Jean Muir dresses were practically invisible. They were expert dressmaking, designing. No one ever said, what a wonderful dress. They always said, goodness, you look lovely. My blueprint for fashion was to be simple and stylish. Don't follow the latest fashion. You'll look soppy in a puffball skirt next year.
You look super stylish today yourself. You're wearing a wonderful pair of dark-rimmed glasses, very specifically circular, some beautifully crafted clip-on earrings, and this fabulous sweater. I've never seen anybody manage to make a roll neck look quite so chic. You've always had an eye, have you?
Yes, I think I inherited it from my mother, who had a very kind of difficult life. She never could indulge herself. I think she first introduced me to minimalism. Don't try too hard. Just make do with your looks. I'm very short. I'm now 5 feet exactly. And I don't try and make an impact with fashion. I think for me and for quite a lot of women, just make yourself look your best, and honestly, simplicity is the best watchword.
So style is always utmost in your mind, but you have had to succumb to the reality of a stairlift, I understand. But
yes,
you have customised your stairlift.
My Stanner stairlift is wonderful. I had to sign a letter of indemnity that if it caught fire, it was my fault, not Stanner. And I got some fabric I'd had from Paris, 20 years. It's a black and grey zebra stripe, which is wonderfully smart and everybody admires it. And the engineering up the stairs, I could choose between peach, pale blue or cream. And I said I wanted black.
Yes.
They nearly fainted and said if I changed my mind once they'd painted it black, I would have to pay for redoing it and it would be £1,000.
It's an interesting illustration of the fact that the expectation is that when people reach a certain age, and you yourself now are in your mid-80s, that somehow all of those aesthetic things that the rest of society cares about just pass them by, that a pair of beige slacks in a beige world is just fine.
I'm a very, very visually orientated person. I love looking at beautiful things, beautiful people, beautiful vistas somewhere in the world. I don't know how old I'll be when I die, but I'm not going to be wearing beige all the time.
Let's have some music then, Felicity. Tell me about your first piece today. Why have you chosen this?
Well, this is really quite late in my life. I think the great exciting period of my life was my 21 years on the Daily Mirror. And I was a woman among men, and I hope I earned their respect, and we became really good friends. And at the end of a very hard working day on the Mirror, about 10 of us used to go to a restaurant called Joe Allen's, and there was a wonderful pianist there, Jimmy, and we used to stand round the piano and sing, and then we could each choose our favourite songs. And my favourite song was They're Playing Songs of Love But Not For Me. And now he doesn't see very well, so he doesn't see me coming in, and I still go there. So I give him a cuddle, and he recognises my voice, and he plays. They're playing Songs of Dove, but not for me.
I was a fool to fall and to get that way. Hi-ho, alas, and also lackaday. Although I can't dismiss the memory of his kiss, I guess he never had eyes for me.
That was Dinah Washington and But Not For Me. So, Felicity Green, you were associate editor first at the Sunday Mirror, then the Daily Mirror. I'm wondering about the board meetings. You know, as you looked round the table, there would be a grey suit, maybe a darker suit, then another grey suit, then a blue suit, then another grey suit, and then there would be you.
Well, my mentor at the Daily Mirror was a wonderful man called Hugh Cudlip. He was as near to an editorial genius as I have ever encountered. And he sent for me one Friday. I'd been on the Mirror about 14 years and said, I want you in my office on Monday morning at 9 o'clock. And I thought, I think he's going to fire me, but give me a lot of money to go. He introduced the subject immediately and said, right, as from 2 weeks' time, you're going to be a director on the main board. We need somebody like you, who strange and unexpected things.
And how much did they listen to what you had to say? Did they have the same enthusiasm as Hugh Cudlip for appreciating that you were bringing something literally to the table, to the boardroom table, that was what they needed at that point?
I think, quite honestly, it took them time. I mean, the Mirror was selling 5 million copies a day, with an overlap at the Times at one end and readers who could hardly read at the other. So you really cut a path for mass communication. So I think they appreciated my journalistic abilities. I'm not sure they greeted me with the greatest confidence. But honestly, Kirsty, when you deal with men in situations like I did, you learn how to deal with them. Please believe me, the moment I decided to wear skirts, I had a much easier time. They did not like women in trousers.
What was it about the skirt? Do you think that was... did they just like your legs in a miniskirt?
Or
I don't think
it was personal. I just think they liked girls in skirts.
Yes.
And, you know, they used to wear a tie saying, I am a chauvinist pig, that they thought was a huge joke. So I had to pretend I thought it was a huge joke.
That time in Fleet Street was a hard drinking culture. I mean, when typically was the first, I don't know, glass of wine poured or the first whiskey enjoyed in a day?
Well, it was a wash with booze. It was a wash. Every semi-senior executive had a refrigerator in his office full of drink. And they would open the bottles after the morning news conference. And then most of them, if not all of them, went out to lunch and had a lot to drink. And then at about 2 o'clock, as far as I remember, a whole new team came in who took over because, frankly, everybody from the morning session was not up to it.
And did you take part in the hard drinking culture?
No, never, never, never. No. I decided very early on that I was not going to join the girls who were joining the boys. I saw too many girls incapable and drunk. And I remember when the chairman, who had been an alcoholic and was now teetotal, issued an edict, of which nobody took any notice, saying there will be no drinking in the Daily Mirror office at any time. And one of the people at the conference said, well, as from next Monday, there'll only be two people in the building, the chairman and Felicity Green.
Let's have some more music, Felicity Green. What are we going to hear now? We're on disc number two.
I loved dancing, and I had broken my knee 15 years ago, which had been badly mended 3 times, and I haven't been able to dance. And somebody brought me Buena Vista Social Club, and I suddenly found, to my amazement, I was dancing. I got up in my living room and I started to dance. And I think if I have this on my desert island, I'll be dancing.
Llego a Puerto, voy para Mayarín. Ondeando cero voy para Marcané. Llego a Puerto, voy para Mayarí.
The Buena Vista Social Club and Chan Chan. So, Felicity Green, it was 1926, the year you were born, and you were brought up in Dagenham in Essex. How did your mum and dad get on?
Not very well. My mother was totally deaf and my father was impatient. And the only way my mother could communicate was lip reading. So I learned to speak very clearly and very slowly.
And you were an only child.
I was an only child. And my role was to make peace between the two of them from an age I can't remember when I started. I'm three, I should think. My father had a terrible temper, and my mother was always trying to persuade him, you know, not to ruin the family, not to spend money we didn't have. He was generous to everybody except us. We had a very, very poverty-stricken life. So it was a difficult time for me.
Did that make you feel nervous or insecure?
It made me feel insecure. It did make me feel insecure. We lived in Dagenham. We were the only Jewish family in Dagenham, as far as I can remember. I didn't like being Jewish. You know, a child always wants to be like the other children, and I wasn't like the other children.
And you had this family ritual. You and your father would go religiously every week to the cinema.
Oh, yes. My mother would go to the East End to buy kosher food because she came from a very Orthodox family. And my father and I used to go to the pictures. We used to go to two cinemas where they had a double feature film. So every week on a Thursday, my father and I went to the pictures. And I became, at that age, a dedicated, devoted film fan, which I still am.
And were you, when you were going to the cinema with your dad, were you looking at the outfits that the actresses were wearing? Were you sort of modelling yourself on a certain look of the time?
I think I must have been, but I always was wearing something extremely simple. I used to draw my clothes, and we had a fish shop on one side and a barber shop on the other side of our shoe shop in Dagenham. And the barber's wife was a dressmaker, and so I would take my sketches to Mabel, and Mabel would make my clothes for me. And I reckon I could wear them now.
Let's have some more music then. What are we going to hear now, Felicity Green?
One of my father's virtues was he had a lovely singing voice, and he used to sing this song to me, in fact, to anybody who'd listen.
By the light of the silvery moon, I want to spoon to my honey, I'll croon love's tune, honeymoon. Keep a shining in June. Your silvery beams will bring love's dreams. We'll be cuddling soon by the silvery moon.
Doris Day and By the Light of the Silvery Moon. Never mind dancing to the last track, Felicity. You looked as if you were almost out of your chair to that one too.
I was a keen dancer from the age of four. And that's one that gets me going every time I listen to it.
Right. So you learned to dance, you were a shy little girl, and your parents wanted what for you?
My mother was ambitious for me. She wanted me to be a shorthand typist and then a private secretary to a very important, nice man. My mother felt I had to learn shorthand typing.
And were you good at shorthand? Were you...
I have to impress you, Kirsty. I went to Pitman's College and I have at home, listen to this, a certificate for 240 words a minute, which you can hardly speak 240 words a minute. It's absolutely impossible to speak. But I got a certificate for that. It was really almost impossible.
And how was your typing?
I was the worst pupil Pitman's had ever had, and I still am the worst typist. And it's terrible because being a sub-editor, I have to go back and correct everything. I'm a terrible typist.
When did you begin to think that journalism was an interesting profession?
Much later. I discovered a magazine called Woman and Beauty. It was so far in advance of its time. This was in the early 50s. And while other magazines were doing knitting patterns to make an egg cozy for Christmas, she was doing virginity, frigidity, relationships, mental problems. I mean, it was amazing. And I thought, I want to work for this magazine. And so I wrote her a letter and I got a reply. Will you come and see the editor, Phyllis Digby Morton, next Monday morning? And I went to see her and she talked to me for quite a long time. And then she said, I'm going to give you a job. You're going to walk the dog and make the fire. We had coal fires in those days, until you are ready to do something better.
And working then in this office, I'm imagining it was probably quite a glamorous place to work, was it?
Oh, no, it wasn't. In those days, it was not glamorous. And my job walking this bloody dog that never wanted to go for a walk, and I had to drag it. I used to pick it up so nobody knew I was dragging him. But I looked and I learned, and it took me very little time to know. A, I wanted to be a journalist, and B, I wanted to write about fashion.
Let's have some more music for now. Tell me what we're going to hear now, Felicity. We're on our fourth track today.
This was the first musical I remember going to, and when we came out and I was drunk with pleasure and sadness, the gentleman we were with said, this is ridiculous, it'll close in 2 weeks, you can't make a musical about such a sad, sad story. Well, everybody knows what happened to West Side Story. I think for me the most emotional one in this very emotional story is There's a Place for Us, because we all know there isn't.
That was Marnie Nixon and Jim Bryant, and Somewhere from the original soundtrack of West Side Story by Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim. So, Felicity Green, we know that your first job then in publishing was at Women and Beauty magazine. These magazines, of course, there's a proliferation of them today in every newsstand, selling women an ideal that, you know, we can never really possibly live up to. And it's so seductive to us all. Indeed, on one occasion, I understand you were called to give the Prime Minister's wife a home perm.
Oh, God, yes.
That's what happened. Who was
that? That was the most extraordinary thing. I was working for Phyllis Digby Morton. She said to me, will you come to dinner? We're giving a dinner for... Harold Wilson at that time was head of the Board of Trade, and his wife, Mary, and we'd love you to join us for dinner. Well, I was deeply honoured. I couldn't imagine why, but thank you, I would love it. And then she said, I'd like you to give Mary, Harold's wife, a home perm. What? I'd never given anybody a home perm except myself, and it was a bit of a risk. To say I was frightened is nothing like the truth. I was terrified. And I can remember going into the bathroom and opening this box, which was made of recycled cardboard in those days. And vividly, I can see it now, inside the lid, it said, in case of emergency, phone Kingston 7777. Fortunately, I didn't have to, and the perm was wonderful, and she wrote me a poem to thank me, and I've lost it, which is really, really sad.
You mentioned earlier Hugh Cudlip, this legendary figure on Fleet Street. He was the youngest ever editor of the Sunday Mirror, just 24. What sort of advice did he give you? What was it about his editorial judgment that was so spot on?
Well, he was the best tabloid journalist ever, and he created a Mirror with real excitement and also, for me, a social conscience. We cared about people. We tried to make the government operate in a sympathetic, sensible, successful way. It was like working for, I don't know, a cross between a striptease artist and a priest. I mean, it really did everything for me in the right way.
Let's go to disc number 5 then, Felicity. Tell me why you've chosen this and tell me what it is.
Record number 5. Well, I was on the Mirror when the Beatles were born and they went from nowhere to everywhere. But along the way, the Mirror was doing one of their amazing promotions, fun and important. And I can remember one day in the news conference, Hugh Cunliffe said to me, who are these debutantes that keep having balls? We're going to give a Daily Mirror ball. We're going to give a ball for the char ladies of Britain. And that's what we did. Our cabaret was Cilla Black singing Shout and the Beatles.
The Beatles and I Want to Hold Your Hand. So this pink gingham mini dress then, Felicity Green, it was a reader's offer in the Daily Mirror.
Yep.
People were allowed to buy it for just a few quid. You thought you might sell how many?
I thought we'd sell 3,000.
Right.
And so Barbara and her husband Fitz ordered enough pink gingham to make 3,000.
And this is Barbara Hulanicki. Who was Biba. She was known
as
Biba.
She invented Biba. I mean,
yes.
It wasn't there yet. But when the dress came in, I was so absolutely smitten by it, I decided to do it big. And I was sent for by the advertising director and Hugh Cunliffe to say, we're worried about this foreign person you're giving all this space to in the Daily Mirror. How do you know she won't run off with our readers' money? And I said, with rather more confidence than was justified, I know she won't run off with the money, and if she does, I'll replace it. I think I was earning £20 a week at that time.
And this extraordinary moment, I suppose, when people at the Mirror thought, well, here, you know, this is, I said in the introduction, somebody with their finger on the pulse. In a way, they knew that you were good at what you were doing, but they didn't really understand what you were doing, which is so sort of representative of exactly what was happening in Britain at that moment.
Absolutely. It was an explosion in every sense of the world.
And you yourself, apart from working hard, I'm wondering, were you partaking of swinging London? I mean, were you out in the clubs? Were you wearing the miniskirts? Were you having fun?
I was wearing miniskirts, and we went to lots of clubs. And the fashion scene was so exciting, and I went to all the new little boutiques in Carnaby Street. For me, it was the most exciting thing, not only in my life, but in the world's life, Britain's life.
So there you were, making these great strides forward in Fleet Street, at the same time that abortion was being legalised, the pill was starting to be widely available. And this is the same time that Larry Lamb, who's the editor of The Sun, is introducing Page Three Girls into The Sun. It was a curious time, wasn't it, when those two things were going on, you know, apparently contradictory in Britain.
Well, I don't think they were contradictory. I think they were complementary.
You do?
Oh, I do. I mean, I don't believe women were one or the other at that time. So many of them were embracing the new ideas, meanwhile wearing their miniskirts, meanwhile being modern women. The Mirror embraced all those important social changes in women's lives.
For all its sort of political correctness at the time, though, isn't it the case that you were being paid significantly less than the men you were working with?
Oh, it was really sad. I'd been a director for 5 years. I discovered that I was earning $14,000 a year and the new director was on $28,000. And I was so outraged at this that I thought, I don't want to be here. This is not right. And I'd been offered a job for about the last 10 years by Vidal Sassoon, whom I'd known since we were both about 18. So I phoned him up and said, if you want me to go and work for you, I'll come.
You must have, though, personally felt so insulted by that.
I was insulted. I was really insulted, but I didn't tell them. What for? What for?
Let's have some more music then. Tell me what we're going to hear. We're going to listen to disc number 6 now, Felicity. What's this?
Well, what's next is Pergolesi's Stabat Mater. I've been a film fan all my life. I always will be. And I went to see a French-Canadian film about which I remember nothing. But I remembered this piece of music, and every time I listen to it, it raises my spirits. And I think two female voices, when they're wonderful, singing together, have a special thrill for me.
Stabat Mater.
Pergolesi's setting of the Stabat Mater with June Anderson and Cecilia Bartoli, and the Sinfonietta of Montreal conducted by Charles Dutoit. You were married then, Felicity Green, for around about 40 years to Geoffrey. Was he always very relaxed about this very high-powered career that you had?
He was more than relaxed. He was unfailingly proud and supportive. He gave up work where he was in the cigar business, and he spent the rest of his life, he died 19 years ago, looking after me. I mean, there are husbands who resent a successful wife. There was never a trace of resentment. It was total support and amusement, and he was just a wonderful husband.
You said a very poignant thing after he died. You said that you've got plenty of people to do something with, but there's no one with whom you can do nothing.
Well, for me, that's totally true. It was true when he died, and it's been true ever since. In fact, I'm now incredibly busy, and I value time on my own. But at the beginning, I wasn't very good at it.
And you never had children with Geoffrey, is that?
No, this is a confession. I never wanted children, absolutely not. I just didn't enjoy my own childhood. I didn't see any point. I wasn't sure I'd make a good mother. And I had my job, which filled my life. And that was fine. I never regretted that. What has happened to me now is a cross between a comedy and a tragedy. I miss having grandchildren so badly I can hardly bear it. When I'm with friends of my age or even younger, and they either produce the grandchildren or photographs of these wonderful children, I can hardly prevent crying. So, I mean, there's nothing I can do about this, but I find it tragic and amusing. I mean, honestly, what was I up to?
I wonder, though, do you think that this very demanding, high-powered career that you had at the time of your life that you had that career, do you think it would have been possible with children, or do you think inevitably being a mother would have taken over?
I can't answer that question because I was never convinced I would be a good mother. And I'm still not entirely convinced I would have been a good mother.
Why? What do you think it is about you that might have made you a bad mother?
I reckoned being responsible for another person's happiness and future, I just think I couldn't handle it. I just believed I didn't have enough within me to hand on to a child.
What about your parents then and what they made of your life? Were they very proud of your career and your success?
Well, my father never really knew about my career because he died much, much earlier than my mother.
Right.
My mother was so intensely proud of me, I thought she would burst. I was her life. I mean, I was just everything she lived for, all my life and all her life.
We're on disc number 7, Felicity. Tell me what you've chosen and why you've chosen it.
Well, I've been a Barbara Streisand fan ever since her first musical in New York. But the record I've chosen is something that for me combines all my enthusiasms. It's the film again, called The Way We Were. And it was Barbara Streisand at her most Streisand best. And opposite, Robert Redford. If you're after beauty, they don't come more beautiful than Robert Redford as a naval officer in his naval whites.
Memories light the corners of my mind. Misty watercolor memories of the way we were.
That was Barbara Streisand and The Way We Were. So, Felicity Green, this career of yours has taken in, as you mentioned, Vidal Sassoon. You worked at The Telegraph, you worked at various magazines. You were also a lecturer at St. Martin's College for many years. You're back there again at the moment. I wonder how close you can possibly feel. I'm thinking of the age gap between you and your students. It must be, I don't know, what, about 60 years between you and the people that you're teaching?
Yeah.
Yes. Is there a generation gap that matters, or do you not really notice?
Well, All I can say is I'm 84 years old. I don't feel 84 years old. And some days I don't even look 84 years old. So, no, I don't think there will be a gap.
And the V&A as well. Not interested in your dresses, which I'm sure are splendid, but very much interested in your writing.
Well, what happened was they heard about my Daily Mirror cuttings book, and they're a pile as high as I am. And looking through them, they're quite extraordinary. Anyway, somebody told somebody at the V&A, and they would like them for their archive. And I'm very thrilled about that, as you can imagine. I mean, it's a lovely thing to happen.
Are you still writing now?
No, I actually stopped writing. I always loathed writing. I was a very prolific writer. I'm a very fast writer, and I can only write longhand. But I've always hated writing, and a number of people, kind people, have said, you've got to write a book. I absolutely have no intention ever of writing a book. I can't think. It will probably sell 2,500 copies if I'm lucky. Writing for pleasure or publication, no, not now, not ever.
And so this very busy life that you still have, when I cast you away onto the desert island, do you think you'll be glad of a little rest and relaxation?
I think I'll hate it. And I'll look for passing boats in case somebody lifts me off this island. But I'll do my best. I will do my best, and I've got lovely music to listen to.
For now, though, Felicity Green, tell me about the final piece of music we're going to hear today.
Well, the final piece of music reminds me of my husband, because when we had friends to supper, I was writing a cookery column, among other things, and I became a really good cook, simple cook, like my clothes, very simple. And Geoffrey used to do the washing up, and I used to go to bed, and I used to listen to him, because while he was doing the washing up, this was the piece of music that he always played. So I went to sleep listening to Spring, and I can hear Geoffrey clashing the plates.
The opening of Spring from Vivaldi's Four Seasons, played by Guidon Kremer with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Claudio Abbado. So I'm going to give you the books now, Felicity Green, the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare. The other book's going to be what? What are you going to take?
Well, I am a Sondheim fan, and a book has just been published. It's called Finishing the Hat, and it's all Sondheim's lyrics. I would love that book because every time I read his lyrics, I can hear the music in my head. So that's my book. It weighs a ton.
All right, it's yours. And a luxury.
Well, could I have a reincarnation of my black standard poodle?
No.
No, I didn't think you would let me.
Sorry.
Okay. So what I've got, my flat is full of pictures and sculptures, and I would like to take one with me that is my favourite. And it's by Giles Penny, and it's about 18 inches high, and it's two men on a bench. It's in bronze. And every time I pass them, I stroke their heads.
It's yours then. And if you had to choose just one of the eight discs that you've had today, which one would it be?
Well, I think it has to be the Buena Vista Social Club because its memories are so poignant for me. If I have that one with me, I'll keep moving to music until my boat comes home.
It's yours. Felicity Green, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you, Kirsty. I've enjoyed every minute. Thank you.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.